This is Mona Lisa Baseball.
I'd like to introduce to you a friend of mine, baseball fan, baseball player, and fan of the show. Welcome to the show, A15.
Thank you, guys. Really good to be here. I'm a big fan of the show. You know, it's funny. It's hard for me to call myself a baseball fan anymore, to be honest with you. I used to watch a lot of baseball. I mean, I played for a long time, but these days I don't pay much attention anymore. I know you guys talk about it, but probably my biggest baseball fandom is listening to you guys, honestly.
How did this happen?
Well, you know, I grew up in the Midwest. The Reds were my team. And I remember I was watching about 150 some games a year back in like 2010, 2011. And then we had that series against the Giants. I was living here in San Francisco then in 2012. And that was a heartbreaker on my side of things. But also, you know, like just loving what the city looked like and how alive everybody was watching that second championship happen. And, you know, I didn't stop being a Reds fan, but I just like embraced San Francisco's love of the Giants, I would say. So I was riding the wave with everybody, but I just stopped paying attention to the Reds as much because, you know, being a fan of Cincinnati sports, it's a bit of a nightmare. And I'm like, what am I doing this for? And so I just was like watching baseball and enjoying it. But over time, as the game just started to get worse for all the reasons that you guys talk about, it just lost its appeal for me and stopped checking things out. I'll watch a few innings here and there if there's a game on TV. You know, I like to go to a game now and again, but I don't feel like I am a fanatic.
Did you feel it happening, or was it too slow to even notice?
Too slow to notice. And the other thing was, you know, moving here to San Francisco, I became a Warriors fan back in 2010. And so then all of a sudden now it's like, here's a game that feels like it's on the up. And that excitement really caught me, and all basically all my sports attention went there.
Yeah, you started paying attention to the Warriors at a really good time. They were really awful for so long, and it was just about to turn. Nice work.
Totally, yeah. It's like I turned on the movie, all right, and all of a sudden it's just like I'm watching the plot just like carry me forward. It was incredible.
Well, I remember when they traded Monte Ellis for Bogut, I was furious because they kept saying, we're going to bring a championship to this town. And I kept saying, how about you make the playoffs? Let's not just start with championship because this is pipe dream bullshit. And then why are we putting all our stock in this skinny guy that's hurt all the time, can't really even drive? I don't get it. And then got to watch Steph the next 15 years. Could not have been more wrong about Steph, and that just makes me so happy. Like, I never could have predicted he would become one of my favorite athletes, but it's not just what he does on the court, it's everything. I feel like he embodies like an old school, how could you put it, like a Barry Sanders, just something that I'm just here doing my job. I'm not more special. I love my teammates. I love it when we win, and it's so much fun. And doesn't really need to say anything more than that. That's when you know baseball is bad, when you start going on Steph Curry tangents and you're like, let's talk about the Warriors on this baseball show.
Yeah, A15 does have a baseball story to tell for us.
I do have a baseball story. And a matter of fact, I want to start with a baseball trivia question.
Oh, this is great.
I think you're going to enjoy.
Oh, great.
The question is, what is California's oldest baseball team that still plays today?
And you're talking any league or professionals?
Any league.
Yeah. I have a guess. I think this was a team. I have no idea if they still exist, but Oakland Oaks.
All right. Dude, I'm not even going to guess because, I mean, I don't even know all the minor league teams, to be honest with you, but go Ballers.
The answer is the San Quentin baseball team.
Huh. The prison team. Huh.
Prison team established in 1916. And so, of course, our pro teams moved here after that. Although, of course, we're established, I think the Giants and Dodgers both 1883 origins, but didn't move to California until 58.
I'll bet you stumped a lot of that audience.
So I got to play that team.
So you went and played at San Quentin against the inmates.
I did. Yeah. You know, this was not something I saw coming and made me very nervous for various reasons, which I'll get into. But basically the way this happened was I have a buddy who met someone associated with the athletic program at San Quentin. And he learns that they have this baseball program where outside teams come and play. This has been going on since 1994. And my buddy says, oh, I have a team. Can we play you guys? And the person says, oh, sure. Yeah. Fill out the paperwork. My buddy fills it out. And then my friend goes and recruits a team because he did not, in fact, have a team. And I was one of the people that he recruited.
Watch out. You can get locked up for lying like that.
So I haven't played a baseball game in, I think, 11 years. I'm 41. When I was in high school, I was a catcher, pitcher, third base. I played a little bit in college. I walked onto a D1 college team, but dropped out of it almost immediately because as a walk-on, I wasn't getting any playing time. I needed to work my way through school. Like, I just couldn't afford to play, really. So I started playing club. So I played club through college. We used to travel around and play D2, D3 school varsity teams and other club teams from D1 schools. It was a bunch of fun, pretty competitive, but, you know, just the type of thing where it was my love of baseball that really kept me in it. And then after college, I watched a lot of baseball, but I kind of thought, yeah, I'm never going to play again. Pickup baseball is kind of like a thing that didn't exist, at least in the Midwest. And then I moved to San Francisco when I was about 25, 26. And 5 years later, I found myself on a wooden bat team out here. And I played one game. I was the starting pitcher in this game. I hit a double and I was rounding second base and dove back into the bag with my right arm outstretched. I fell on it and tore my labrum in my shoulder and just was, you know, I tried to go out and pitch the next inning. I had nothing on my fastball anymore. My arm was killing me.
So it was your pitching arm, I'm
pitching
guessing?
Arm. Yeah. I biked home. Like, I used to bike everywhere. So I biked home. I'm cradling my arm. Like, had it in a sling for a while. And I find out later after a contrast MRI that I got a torn labrum. And I never got it repaired because the doctors explained to me and some friends who have been through this were like, you know, the shoulder surgeries, they're really hit and miss. It's quite possible that you're not actually better off. You should just do a bunch of rehab and maybe you'll be okay. And so over the years, I just strength training and playing other sports and a lot of mobility stuff. So I can kind of throw a ball again. I don't have my top end speed anymore, but I can still throw. So when I heard about this San Quentin thing, I just told him that I was in.
Oh, this might be a great time for me to cut in and ask two questions.
Please.
This is the beauty of having an anonymous show. I would like to know what D1 school you walked on. Answer that, and then I got a very important follow-up.
Miami University.
Miami University?
Yeah, in Ohio.
Okay. Ben Roethlisberger.
You got it.
Okay. Question two, much more important. Have you ever done time before you went to play a baseball game at San Quentin?
I have not. And in fact, had I don't think I would have been able to go and play because we all had to go through a background check.
Nice.
And they don't want you like passing contraband, like like when you're tossing the ball to him, it's got some tape to it.
They were really clear with us. You know, when we went in, they're like, make sure you don't give anything to the prisoners and don't take anything from them. And they're going to try to give stuff to you. So
wow,
that actually shows up a little bit. That was interesting. So I'm in this text thread with some friends called Catch. And so we get together and we play catch now and again. And this is where some of the recruits for this game came from. And, you know, I get the torn labrum. I never, most of the guys I play with were just having a catch. I never try to throw that hard. So I'm maxing out at 70% of what I think maybe I could do if I really pushed it. So going into this game, I really didn't know what I was going to have. But, you know, kind of weeks leading up to the game, it went from being this kind of idea that, oh yeah, we're going to do this crazy thing and we're going to walk out with this wild story, to slowly the emails are coming in. Okay, give us your social security number and all your information so we can do this background check, and you've passed the background check and now we're going to have practice, you know, at this field. And it started to get really real. And my nerves started to go up because we've got this team of recruited players that have varying skill levels. And some people hadn't played more than a little bit of high school, like didn't even play a full high school career. You know, what I know is baseball, if you're playing at a high level, it can be kind of dangerous. I'm thinking, like, do we have somebody who's got their own catching gear? Is the pitcher going to have a catcher who's actually capable of framing a pitch or making it look good? Or is, like, are we going to get completely stomped in this thing? The San Quentin team, are they wearing metal spikes? Like, what's going to happen if there's a close play at second? You know, I can't stop thinking about all the ways this could go really wrong.
Keeping you up at night.
Yeah. I find out there's like people with guns pointed at the field while we play, just in case something goes wrong.
Oh.
Like, we're inside the prison yard. So I'm just really kind of getting spun out about it, but decide basically that I'm going to go until I feel too uncomfortable and I can pull out. So that at least means going to the first practice that we have scheduled.
Now, what position do they want you to play on this team?
We don't even really know. Like, my buddy, he's got these recruits who've come from his friends, then friends of friends. And so we don't really know what positions we have. So we're going to have this practice and then try to figure out our positions there at the practice. I was pretty clear. I can play the infield. I think I'm a better pitcher. I don't want to catch. And so that was kind of the setup. So we get to the field we had reserved in the city, 9 a.m. on Sunday. And we're just like meeting all these people for the first time. What we have on the schedule is we get this one practice for 2 hours. Then we're going to go to the batting cage a different day for an hour. And then we are going to go play this game.
Wow.
And so I'm meeting all these guys, and you can tell some of them have not played baseball in years. Some of them play in a wooden bat league in San Francisco now. And one of them, this gray bearded guy, mid 40s, he tells us that he's played the San Quentin team 10 times. And so immediately he became the most interesting person in the room by a mile.
He becomes the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're like peppering him with questions. Yeah. And while he's telling us all this stuff, he lights up a joint before this practice to like, you know, get straight so he can tell the story. And he tells us that these are super respectful guys, but they play really hard. Yeah. They're going to steal a base every chance they have.
Oh, yeah.
Thieves.
Send them.
And the dirt on the infield is super hard packed, and these guys barrel the ball, and so they're going to be coming hot. And so we break out after warming up to go take infield. The guy hitting the balls is just smacking them as hard as he can at us. And, you know, we haven't fielded a ground ball in like a decade or more. Oh. So it was kind of a wild practice, right? We had a lot of holes as far as I could see it, but also we had some potential. We have like a big range of skill levels. We have a guy who actually played in the minor leagues on the team. So at least someone was going to be able to put the bat on the ball. I'm wearing these, I don't have baseball spikes anymore. I'm wearing soccer cleats that I used for Ultimate Frisbee 15 years ago.
Hold on. My dad, because he's such a cheapskate, deservedly so, worked his ass off. He used to convince me that I could wear my baseball cleats as soccer cleats. They're basically the same. And then every year when the when the refs would go through, everyone would have to stand in the line and put up 1 foot to make sure your cleats were legal. And every year it was, no. These are baseball cleats. You're not allowed to. We need to file down the front spike. This is not allowed because baseball has a front spike. So every year they had to file that down. And it's like, Dad, can't I just get regular soccer cleats? He goes, What's the big deal? You filed it down. Who cares? But I was the only one on the team year after year that tried to wear his baseball cleats in soccer and did.
You had baseball shoes used for soccer. I had soccer shoes I was using for baseball.
Yeah, I don't know which one's better. No ref had to look at you funny and say, we got to take the file.
I always passed the cleat check at center field.
Well, I definitely felt like I was missing that front spike. I would have appreciated some real baseball cleats.
Although the front spike might have cost you your labrum.
You never know. It's so true.
Oh, one thing I wanted to ask. I'm loving this story. I just need to ask before I forget.
Yeah.
Was that your first hit with a wood bat?
So I played this one game in the wood bat league in San Francisco when I tore my labrum.
And you got a double.
And that was my first hit with a wood
bat. Your first and only, well, I'm not going to say only, your first hit with a wooden bat was a double.
And it was my only one because I was out of the game after that.
Was it on the sweet spot? Did it feel sweet? Was it down the line?
The outfield was kind of in. I pulled it left center. I always was a little bit of a pull hitter. And I got it over the guy's head and just kind of was going for it. I don't feel like I really got a hold of it, but
yeah,
you know, a little bit of barrel.
I just have dreams of like what it feels like to actually use a wood bat. So I wanted to live vicariously through you. So thank you.
Speaking of, we went to this batting cage then and we got to bring the wood bats in the cage and it felt amazing. And I want to go to the batting cage all the time now. It's like re-sparked my enthusiasm. So we go through the practice, 2 hours in, we're like taking fly balls. We try to run through a couple quick scenarios and, you know, we're disorganized, but we get through it. And I leave there feeling like, all right, well, at least we've got 9 people who know how to throw and catch a baseball. We'll figure it out. So then a few days later, that was Sunday. On Tuesday, we go to the batting cage. We have the 2 cages for an hour. We've got 6 people there that show up. One in cage, we have a set at 80 miles an hour, just throwing fastballs. The other one's throwing breaking balls. And I was never that good of a hitter, to be honest with you, but I'm putting the barrel on the ball, feeling pretty good. We've got a few guys just ripping it. One guy shows up. He's like coming right from work. He's wearing like a merino sweater and jeans and some boots. And he's just like stroking the ball. So I'm thinking, I'm like, all right, you know, we're going
to
be okay.
He's American. That's how it's supposed to be. It's a pastime.
Yeah. And so that was all the prep, right? Just these 2 quick sessions. And then we're supposed to play on Thursday. And I'm trying to psych myself up for this. We kind of decide I'm starting at third base. I'm not going to be the starting pitcher. And then I'm going to come in and I'm going to relieve at some point. And so I know I'm going to pitch. I'm glad I'm not starting because I don't think I got more than, I don't know, a couple innings at me at most. But I'm thinking about throwing inside. I'm like, how do you throw inside against these guys? And if I can't establish the inside of the plate, how am I going to be able to do anything?
You're afraid to throw inside to criminals?
I'm like terrified about this.
Oh my God.
I would be too.
This is the best.
And so the night before the game, I could not fall asleep. I'm like doing visualizations, like trying to remember what it feels like to break off a curveball. Like, you know, in practice, I'm worried I don't want to blow out my arm. So I wasn't even throwing curveballs in practice. If I can't throw inside, I at least got to be able to throw something off speed. So I'm like trying to do this stuff that I was not mature enough to do when I was a younger baseball player, but I have since learned in other sports, this is actually really valuable to do. So I'm like trying to do this like cross training visualization thing. And I wake up in the morning and it's all I can think about. I've got some work to do. I keep getting on these work calls and telling people like, I'm about to go play in a prison, you know, this afternoon. And everyone is like, they're just so curious. And I just like, I don't even know what to say because I'm not there yet. And so I look up, coming from the city, going to San Quentin, I'm looking up how long it takes to get there. And I've got the email that says, okay, here are the rules. You know, you have to be there by 4 o'clock because we're all getting walked in together. You can't wear anything blue or black or any denim at all because you're going to look just like the inmates. And I look at the time for, it looks like 35 minutes to get there. Great. You know, and this is at like noon.
It sounds like a traffic story.
And so I got to leave with, give myself 15 extra minutes. And I get in the car and I look and it's like, you know, there's traffic up in Mill Valley and it's going to be like an hour and two to get there. And so I'm just out of my house and I call my buddy who's putting this thing on. I'm like, hey man, I don't know if I'm going to make it on time. And he's like, look, just come. I think there's two guys meeting us at the gate. We'll try to leave one outside to bring you in. Like, you know, I'll text you. If we got to leave our phones outside. So it's not like you can keep stay in touch with me. He's like, I'll text you somebody's name.
Yeah.
So I'm like, weaving through traffic, trying to get there. So I'm committing crimes on my way to the prison, you know? And so my adrenaline is like already pumping. It basically was from when I woke up. And so I pull off towards 580 to go on what I see as the first entrance for San Quentin. And I pull up to the gate and there's this guard there. And he comes over looking really confused and leans in the window of my car. And he's like, oh, you're here for baseball, aren't you? I got my baseball pants on. Yeah, I am. And he's like, wrong entrance. You got to go around. It's like, you basically have to go as far as you can outside the city. And then finally you wrap around and you go towards the visitor lot. And as I pull in the visitor lot, I see all the guys for the team. They've all got their now fresh uniforms on. We have a t-shirt. Our team name is the California Dreams. So they've got these like light blue t-shirts on. Everybody's got their baseball pants and then like a khaki hat that says CD on it. And as I pull up and get out of the car, I hear our team leader go, oh yeah, this is our last guy. You know, we're ready. And so we have a volunteer in the parking lot. He's a volunteer, but he basically volunteers just with the baseball team. And he's kind of running us through what to expect. He explains that the oldest guy on the team is in his mid-30s. We've got our people. We've got 9 players and we've got 5 spectators, 3 of whom are women. And he's going to walk us to the gate. You know, we basically have this timeline. The game's got to be done by sunset. We're a little late and it just means that we're going to play a shorter game and we're going to see what happens. So we start walking up there and when we get to the front, and you can tell everyone on our team, we've got the uniforms on, we realize there's no turning back and everyone is nervous. The 3 women that are with us, I'm friends with them. What is their experience about to be like? You know, we're walking into this prison. It's hard for me to understand what the environment is like, going to be like around the field. But we go through the first check, basically the main gate where the visitors are coming in. And I look over and there's this concerning thing that's happening. Our team leader is talking to this guard and he's explaining that we're wearing this blue uniform. Like we can't come in wearing blue. We look just like he's like, you look just like my guys. I can't let you in. And the volunteer is like, no, we've had teams wear blue before. It's like, no, well, those teams, they were wearing jerseys. You guys were wearing t-shirts. Like, you know, we're going to be really worried. We can't tell you apart. And so there's this like period of time where it looks like we're not actually going to be able to get in there. So they bring over somebody else. And finally it's like, okay, we're just going to like, we'll let it slide this time. We'll make it work. And so we go through the first checkpoint. They would give them the IDs. They check it against all of us. They give us a black light stamp on the inside of our wrists. And then we go through like a double locked door that's like an airlock, right? Where you go through the door and you get to wait in the middle and then they do the other door. So we check our IDs three times going in there. And we walk in now finally past the past security checkpoint. We're in this first open yard and there's the chapel. And there's probably 25 prisoners standing out there. And they're all wearing these blue shirts that are basically exactly the same color as our shirts. And every one of them, their eyes are glued on us.
Ooh.
It's the wildest feeling. I look away and I look back and they're just like staring right at me. And I, again, I just like can't imagine what the women were, what they're feeling like here. It felt so intimidating for me. And so we're being led by our volunteer, and he brings us around through the this first yard into then the main athletic yard. And we have to go around the outside of the building, this big four-story building, to get there. And as soon as you're around the corner, you see the expanse of the baseball field. There's a tennis court right there. There's barbed wire around all the top of all the fences.
Yeah.
And then there's these towers, the guard towers up at the top. And then you see Mount Tam.
Yes.
In the distance. And it is gorgeous. But it's also just like completely surreal looking.
I'm a ballpark guy.
Yeah.
To have spiraling barbed wire is a hell of a statement for a ballpark.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let me paint the picture of more of what this looks like. There's not obviously barbed wire on the actual baseball fence, right? The baseball field is inside of the larger yard, the quote unquote yard, right? And there's barbed wire all around that. But what's funny about this field is that, so you've got this hard packed dirt that is pretty well groomed. It's clear someone went to some effort on the infield. And then the outfield is very sparse grass. It's not like it's lush by any means. And then the outfield fence doesn't actually extend to the foul lines. There's like probably 20 or 25 feet of gap between the foul line and where the fence ends. And so we're looking at this like there's got to be some weird ground rules that must be forthcoming, but whatever. You know, we're just kind of trying to get into it. There's two dugouts on either side, and then there's a little bleachers for whoever, I assume prisoners or your guests or whoever wants to sit and watch, that sits between the third base dugout and home plate. And so we get down there and take the first base dugout, and we have a couple balls in our bag, and we walk out onto the field, and we're looking over, and there's a one-story building beyond the outfield fence, and there's a few hundred prisoners lined up beyond that fence, not moving at all. And they're all staring at us, of course, because we're hot. And so we go out.
Tell me about that term. You're hot. What?
You know, it's everyone is on us. It's like we're the magnet of the situation. And I don't mean that in a good way. It's just like we can't be ignored, I guess. We're too attractive of a target.
Right,
so.
Right.
So.
Coming in hot.
Yeah. So we go out and we're like, some of us are on the infield, which is really nicely lined. Someone has raked it to perfection. It's the dirt quality is like kind of low. It's almost like maybe it's clay or something. It's really hard packed with like these kind of bigger clumps of dirt on it, but they're pretty uniform. It's certainly not going to slow the ball down much. And we start to play a little catch there to warm up. And the volunteer runs over and he says, "Not on the infield." And so we got to the outfield line and all the prisoners are looking at us. And what I realized in that moment was that the prisoners, of course, did all of the work on the field. You know, they went to extreme efforts to make sure this thing looked perfect, because the thing we're about to do is effectively play in what feels like the World Series for them. It's the most important thing. They're getting to do this thing that you can imagine. It's all week long. I was, whatever experience I was having, they must have been having times 100, right? Of just like getting hyped up for this game.
Do you know how many they play a year?
They play 35 games a year. And they have practice 3 days a week.
You guys are going to get smoked.
We're going to get effing smoked. There's no question about it.
Even got home field advantage.
Yeah.
Big time.
And also, you know, like I said, I'm in my early 40s. These guys are younger than us too. So the outfield fence, we've got like 350 to center. It's about 280 up the lines. And there's this tennis court next to the baseball field on the third base side as well. And what's interesting is we're warming up a little bit. I'm thrown with this guy who's like, he must be 25 or 26. He's got a pretty good arm. We're playing catch. And he just jumps right into it and is throwing gas at me. My adrenaline's pumping, so I'm throwing back to him. And I immediately like pull a muscle in my leg, like right away. And so I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to play through it, you know? And what we're trying to figure out is why all the prisoners are lined up and no one is coming on the field. And we look over and then we see 25 players in black Giants jerseys. And they're apparently the San Francisco Giants donated these jerseys. They're exact Giants jerseys, except they have SQ on the front instead of SF. And they look awesome.
Yeah, I want one.
These guys look really good.
I want one.
Meanwhile, we are wearing basically exactly the prisoners are wearing, right? So it's like this total like wild role flip feeling where like we're the inmate somehow. So then the volunteer comes over and explains that the reason that they're all back there behind this fence and not with us is that one of the prisoners has gone missing and none of the prisoners are allowed to move until they find him.
And he's no way.
Yeah, he's like, we might be screwed. We might not be able to play unless they find this guy.
Let me tell you, I got a plan to escape.
So, you know, we have no idea what's going on. We're just going to keep warming up. Can we take some infield? Sure, take some infield. So we're just like going through the thing. And, you know, we're getting looked at by everybody. But what I'm really seeing is that these San Quentin players are scouting us. They're trying to figure out like, who they're going to run on, who can't throw. And so about 15 minutes into our infield, the announcement comes for them and they find the prisoner. And so these guys are coming on out. And so we're done with our infield and now they're going to take the field and get warmed up. And we're just kind of watching what's going on. And they are a tight team. Like everything, the ball's whipping around. It's like things look clean. And now we're starting to get a little interaction with them. Because when the ball comes over to our dugout, now the guy would come up to you and you'd go, hey, what's your name? You know, introduce himself. And the thing that struck me was how unbelievably present and respectful every single one of these prisoners were. The way I started to think about it afterward was their freedom is so constrained. In fact, they don't have freedom. What they have is these moments where they can feel free and they take full advantage of them. They would look you right in the eye and just like wanted to engage with you and understand and just connect. And it's something that you don't even get in a Starbucks, you know, but then you go in the prison and you get it right away.
Oh man.
Yeah. It was really surreal.
That's cool.
I imagine these guys who are playing baseball have special privileges. Like they're not going to let the worst of the worst at San Quentin, which is some pretty interesting people, play on the baseball team, right?
Yeah, exactly. These are in fact some of the best behaved prisoners. They get this privilege to play the outsiders, but it should be known that most of the people on the baseball team had life sentences.
Oh.
So we find out a few things. You know, I mentioned we're going to kind of get some ground rules here. When we start the game, this is the Thursday afternoon game. They also play a game on Saturdays. The Saturday game, it's like, I don't know what the exact term is, but essentially like open yard where the prisoners, they're all allowed out during the game. And so they'll watch. Some will just be walking around. They'll be playing other sports in the other areas. But in this timing, we're going to have some prisoners out there. It's just not going to be quite as crowded. But what this means is they're allowed to basically go wherever they want, including walking through the baseball field at the warning track. And so while we're playing the game, there's just going to be this traffic going on. And so they say, like, you know, if there's a fly ball out there and you've got a chance at it, but somebody's in the way, you just throw up your arms and we're just going to give you the out, which is, you know, okay, fine. And then also these alleys on the side, like the ball goes out there, you know, you can play it if you want, or you can throw up your arms and we'll call it a double or whatever you want to do. So
I was hoping that they were going to just play it as a live ball where it's like, if you pull it down the line, didn't go over the fence, left fielder, go chase it.
It was kind of explained like they don't want us to feel impinged by the situation, but also like you're kind of just meant to just play it. So it was a little bit of like discretion in the thing. And as I went through more of the game, I realized like there was something really pure here, which was just like a respect and honesty in the competition. You know, we needed to have clear rules, but also no one was going to try to get away with anything. That was not the goal, the spirit of the game. The environment was like, it was really, I don't know if it was surprising was the word, but it was really comforting.
Okay. I got a question.
Yeah.
Are the umpires part of the prison or do they hire umpires to come in? And
the umpires are inmates.
Mm. Interesting.
At least they're not robots.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take an inmate all day long over a robot all day.
So, the game is going to go either 9 innings or until sunset. And because we were a little late, and then also with this situation with the escape or the missing prisoner, we're not going to get the 9 innings in, but that's fine. They finish their infield and we start to play. And so, of course, we're batting first. And our leadoff hitter, who's also our starting pitcher, he pokes a little Texas leaguer blooper for a double down the third base line. And we're off to the races. And we get this hit and we're like, oh, okay, maybe this is going to be fine. And then, you know, they immediately put us out. I think maybe it was 1-2-3 after that. We didn't get the run across. And then bottom of the first, like I'm starting at third base, right? And I'm looking at these guys come up and a lot of them are like big dudes. They're doing the warm up swings. These guys like can hit, I can tell. And I'm worried they're just going to pop it right at me. And they put four on us in the first inning. It was just like immediately they're just mashing.
Give me a rough estimate of the speed your starting pitcher's throwing.
So our starter, he throws a lot of junk. And I would say that he was sitting high 60s, maybe 70 mm-hmm. with his fastball, but like really painting the corners well. Mm-hmm. What I noticed about the San Quentin players was they had great eyes. They were not swinging at anything. And the umpires seemed to be calling a fair game, but he also wasn't calling a big zone. And so, you know, we were having to work for it a little bit. And so we throw it over the plate and these guys are barreling the ball. So it felt like we were really up against some solid competition. And then once our nerves settled down a little bit, I think we had a 1-2-3 in the second. And then the third inning, we ended up scoring four runs. And so now we got the game tied up 4-4. Mm. And when the game gets tied up now, this is basically the same time when all these other prisoners started to come out and walk around. And so now they're walking through the outfield. They're just walking around the field on the little track that goes around. And what was really surprising to me is a lot of these prisoners like had stuff. Like this guy walks by and he's got a guitar he's playing while he's walking. And I didn't know the rules. Like I guess prisoners get to have some possessions and I don't know if they have limited time when they can use them or what, but it was just kind of like, this was the best moment of their days, right? And what we were seeing was like, as they would walk around, they're walking by our dugout and they're like stopping to talk with us and just like, hey, where are you guys from? Like what, you know, really curious. And even though I know we were playing the best behaved folks, so many of them were just incredibly nice. And it made me think a lot about rehabilitation. You know, I'm a person who believes people can change, but what I saw was like evidence that these people clearly had made some very bad mistake in their lives. But a lot of them, when I would talk to them, they would tell me stories about how they looked at prison as being this opportunity for them to become a better man, and that they see that they made a big mistake and it's the thing they regret most. And now they have a chance to just live better. And the fact that San Quentin does this program where they bring in outsiders, free people to interact, made so much more sense to me than the idea where you're just going to have people locked up and then drop them cold back into society one day. And then how do you kind of reacclimate? So I'm super focused on the game, but also just like the presence in the entire experience about what I was going through and who I was dealing with. Like it was just like all encompassing. I didn't have a single thought for the 3.5 hours we were there about anything other than what was right in front of me, the game itself, and then the experience of the prisoners that I was talking to. It was a wild experience. So what's happening now that we have all these other prisoners walking around is we're getting jawed at a lot more. And a lot of it is they're talking smack to their own team, you know, just kind of like if someone doesn't swing at something, they're like, come on, man, you know, whatever. But then also they're talking to us a little bit and it's remarkably friendly. It's not like there's nothing mean spirited in there, but they definitely are happy to heckle a little bit. One dude I remember walked by and I started talking with him. This is why we're batting. And he comes and he starts talking about how I used to be a baseball player. This dude's like, he's got no teeth. He's a little bit all over the place. His like eyes are darting around and he just basically explains like he thinks he could have been great, but he started doing drugs when he was a little kid. Even though he's like my age, he looks like he's 15 years older and his body is just like completely run down. And I look over at the bleachers and of course the three women that came with us, they're getting a lot of attention. People keep stopping to talk with them. It's a total scene.
You're the first woman I've seen in 20 years.
Yeah. So I get two opportunities at third base. I catch a pop-up, and then we also have a nice pickle between third and second base on a guy who got a little too greedy on a double. And so it feels good to just kind of like get some touches because they weren't hitting the ball on the ground at third base very much. Like I had one pulled down the line right by me that I had no chance at, but a lot of like, you know, when they were making contact, they were hitting the ball hard on the line, like in the outfield. So we get into the top of the fifth. And our team leader says, all right, you're going to go in and pitch. And so I get up, and at this point, my soccer cleat had delaminated on my right foot. And so it's like, I've got all the dirt in my shoe, and the adrenaline that has kind of like slowly tapered off a little bit is just like re-spiked completely. And I start thinking back about like, okay, how am I going to throw against these guys? I don't feel like going inside. And I know they're all much nicer now, but I'm still feeling like what happens, you know? And so the first batter, I'm like, first pitch, I'm outside. At this point, I can probably throw 80. Maybe, you know, I used to be upper 80s, and there's no way I'm getting there anymore. But I still got a little heat. I'm throwing harder than the previous guy. Second pitch, I hit the guy right in his side. And I sprinted off the mound. And I got my hands up, and I run over to him. I'm so sorry, man. I'm so sorry. And he's like, he laughs it off, and he's rubbing it. And he's like, it's all good, you know, whatever. Runs down to first base. And I'm just like, you know, my worst nightmare immediately coming true out there.
Was it a fastball?
Fastball. Oh, I got
it. And you still got a bat.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And so the second batter, he's up there. I get the fastball over. And then my catcher calls for a curveball, which I haven't thrown in forever. And I try to break off a curveball, and it goes behind him.
Oh.
And everyone on the opposing bench is like, oh. And
my God.
I end up kind of getting it under control a little bit. I strike out two in that half the inning. We get out of there. I think they put up a couple runs on me, but it was like we had some errors in the field. I don't think I gave up any earned. I was like, I couldn't even tell you. I was just trying to focus on getting the ball over the plate. So the bottom of the inning comes up, and I'm batting. And
wait. Did they try to steal on you?
Nobody tried to steal on me.
Oh. No.
I got a pretty decent move, and I was paying a lot of attention. And I was throwing almost all fastballs. So there wasn't like a bunch of opportunity.
Okay.
Did you throw over to first at all?
I didn't even throw over. I kind of like stepped off a few times and looked, and that was about it.
You only get two disengagements though, so be careful there.
There's another thing. There's no pitch clock. There's no, you know, we're playing by classic baseball rules here. It was beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were playing real baseball.
Real baseball. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And so I'm up there in the bottom of the inning, and it's like the second pitch comes in high and tight, like really close. And I back off, and the pitcher, you could see his face goes white because I'm sure they get some talking to that's like, we cannot be seen as coming across as aggressive in any way. And they don't want to lose their privileges. And so he's like really worried about it.
Right.
Meanwhile, it didn't hit me, and he's worried about it. I just shout back, it's okay. I deserved it. And their whole dugout loses it.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, we're in it together now. So I end up like not a good showing at the plate. Over the course of the game, I struck out twice and had like a ground out to second. And the next inning, when I get up there, kind of the wheels come off a little bit. I get another strikeout. But I walk two guys, they start really barreling the ball up. I had one dude just absolutely rip one on a fastball. He was like the 3 or 4 hitter and just like push it all the way to the fence in center. So I'm like 35 pitches into this inning, and just my arm is, it's just not working anymore. And the volunteer is like, okay, we're actually just going to cut this half inning short because it was clear the sun was going down. And he explains like, you know, we're down 12-5 at that point. And he's like, we're just going to let you guys bat, and that'll be the end of it. And so we get up there, we go down 1-2-3, and the game's over. And it was funny. We were all really taken aback, a little off guard by the fact that they wanted to just cut the inning short there. But the other thing I realized was like, they really want for us to have this like good, for everyone to have a good experience. The game was kind of getting a little bit out of hand. We weren't going to be able to play a full game anyway because of, we get this light requirement. And so they just kind of made this decision in what felt like the fairest thing to do for everyone. And so we go down 1-2-3 in the bottom of the inning, and then we go and form a handshake line with these guys. And we had talked to them a little bit, but we didn't really have like much physical contact with them. And then we're going down the line. I was actually in the front, and we had a hug, every single guy. It was like dap and then hug with every one of them. And they were all just so, they were just profusely thankful for our coming to spend our free time with them. And so we go through this line, and then we all circle up in the infield, the prisoners and our team. And the prisoners are asking us, what, in a word, what was this experience like for you? And we're all giving our different words and how we feel about it. And then one of the prisoners gets in the middle and we all huddle around him and he leads a prayer. And his prayer is entirely for us, the visitors, praying for our safe drives back to our homes, praying for our family, praying for our finances, just praying that we have a great life. It was incredibly moving. And afterward, I found the guy that I hit and I went over and I said, "Hey man, I'm sorry about that." And he's like, "Hey," he's like, "You know what? I'm just mad because I should have been able to get out of the way." He was super friendly about it. So then we circle up and somebody says, "Okay, baseball on three." And 1, 2, 3, baseball, everybody.
Was anyone getting misty eyed at the end of the, like having such a robust experience? And sounds like everyone was probably taken off guard. And then you go to this powerful emotions of prayer and stuff. Are people like going through it a little where?
I mean, I certainly was. I can't speak for anyone else's experience, yeah. But we, you know, what I heard from all my other teammates walking out of there was just like, this was a completely eye-opening experience. It was like one of these things where while we're going through it, you could tell you were going to remember it for the rest of your life. Like yeah. It was just that impactful. And so we walk out of there, free men, and these guys hustle to get a shower before they get locked up in a cell at 8:30. And we felt like equals on the field. And then suddenly it just clearly wasn't the case anymore. And it was really jarring. But I will say overall, it was the most fun I've had in years. It was felt completely free that we were just out there playing a game just to have fun with each other. And so much of the BS that we think about when we think about pro baseball these days, and just the way that it's gone sideways away from the intent, was all gone. And we're just out there, the kids inside of us playing a game.
Wow. That was such an amazing story.
Nine people who know how to throw and catch a baseball will figure it out. Go Ballers. We're hot.
Yeah, that guy dodged that fastball about as well as he dodged that murder charge.
Lay it on us.
It is so easy to get caught up in whatever's going on in your world. And to have that much of a perspective shift being put right in my face, to see these people who felt like equals in this moment right now, they're behind bars. And I'm doing this podcast with you guys. And I can't stop thinking about that because we all make mistakes, right? And they're of different levels, but it's like, it would be a fiction to act like somehow these guys are irredeemable and we can recover from our mistakes and just, you know, live free. It's a heavy thought. I just can't get away from the fact that we treat prisoners this way because I don't know what the better solution is. I do know that, what I saw was a bunch of people who pretty clearly seemed reformed, and yet they're going to continue to serve time, maybe for the rest of their lives.